Chapter 12. Grief. On Vanquishing Tears with Reason. Most parents, on learning of the death of a child, will be emotionally devastated. They will weep, perhaps for days on end, and they will be unable to go about their daily routine for a time. Long after the death, they might experience grief flashbacks. Their eyes might well up, for example, on seeing a picture of their child. And how will a Stoic respond to the death of a child? One might imagine that he will respond with no response at all, that he will suppress whatever feelings he might be having, or, better still, that he will have trained himself not to grieve. The belief that Stoics never grieve, although widely held, is mistaken. Emotions, such as grief, the Stoics understood, are to some extent reflexive. In much the same way that we cannot help being startled when we hear a loud, unexpected noise, it is a physical reflex. We cannot help feeling grief-stricken when we learn of the unexpected loss of a loved one. It is an emotional reflex. Thus, in his consolation to Polybius, who was grieving the death of his brother, Seneca writes, "Nature requires from us some sorrow, while more than this is the result of vanity. But never will I demand of you that you should not grieve at all." How much should a Stoic grieve? In proper grief, Seneca tells Polybius, our reason will maintain a mean which will copy neither indifference nor madness, and will keep us in the state that is the mark of an affectionate and not an unbalanced mind. Consequently, he advises Polybius to let your tears flow, but let them also cease. Let deepest sighs be drawn from your breast, but let them also find an end. Although it might not be possible to eliminate grief from our life, it is possible, Seneca thinks, to take steps to minimize the amount of grief we experience over the course of a lifetime. And, given that such steps exist, we ought to take them. We live, after all, in a world in which there is potentially much for us to grieve. Consequently, says Seneca, we ought to be parsimonious with our tears, since nothing must be husbanded more carefully than that of which there is such frequent need. It was with these thoughts in mind that Seneca and the other Stoics developed strategies by which we can prevent ourselves from experiencing excessive grief and overcome quickly whatever grief we might find ourselves experiencing. The Stoics' primary grief prevention strategy was to engage in negative visualization. By contemplating the deaths of those we love, we will remove some of the shock we experience if they die. We will, in a sense, have seen it coming. Furthermore, if we contemplate the deaths of those we love, we will likely take full advantage of our relationships with them, and therefore won't, if they die, find ourselves filled with regrets about all the things we could and should have done with and for them. Besides being used to prevent grief, negative visualization can be used to extinguish it. Consider, for example, the advice Seneca gives to Marcia, a woman who, 3 years after the death of her son, was as grief-stricken as on the day she buried him. Rather than spending her days thinking bitterly about the happiness she has been deprived of by the death of her son, Marcia should, says Seneca, think about how much worse off she would be today if she had never been able to enjoy his company. In other words, rather than mourning the end of his life, she should be thankful that he lived at all. This is what might be called retrospective negative visualization. In normal, prospective negative visualization, we imagine losing something we currently possess. In retrospective negative visualization, we imagine never having had something that we have lost. By engaging in retrospective negative visualization, Seneca thinks, we can replace our feelings of regret at having lost something with feelings of thanks for once having had it. In his consolation to Polybius, Seneca offers advice on how to overcome whatever grief we happen to be experiencing. Reason is our best weapon against grief, he maintains, because unless reason puts an end to our tears, fortune will not do so. More generally, Seneca thinks that although reason might not be able to extinguish our grief, It has the power to remove from it whatever is excessive and superfluous. Seneca then sets about using rational persuasion to cure Polybius of his excessive grief. For example, he argues that the brother whose death Polybius is grieving either would or wouldn't want Polybius to be tortured with tears. If he would want Polybius to suffer, then he isn't worthy of tears, so Polybius should stop crying. If he wouldn't want Polybius to suffer, then it is incumbent on Polybius, if he loves and respects his brother, to stop crying. In another argument, Seneca points out that Polybius's brother, because he is dead, is no longer capable of grief, and that this is a good thing. It is therefore madness for Polybius to go on grieving. Another of Seneca's consolations is addressed to Helvia, Seneca's mother. Whereas Polybius had been grieving the death of a loved one, Helvia was grieving the exile of Seneca. In his advice to Helvia, Seneca takes the argument he offered Polybius, that the person whose death Polybius is grieving wouldn't want him to grieve, one step further. Because it is Seneca's circumstances that Helvia is grieving, he argues that inasmuch as he, being a Stoic, doesn't grieve his circumstances, Helvia shouldn't either. His consolation to Helvia, he observes, is unique, although he read every consolation he could find. In not one of them did the author console people who were bemoaning the author himself. In some cases, such appeals to reason will doubtless help alleviate, if only for a time, the grief someone is experiencing. In cases of extreme grief, though, such appeals are unlikely to succeed for the simple reason that the grieving person's emotions are ruling his intellect. But even in these cases, our attempts to reason with him might be useful, inasmuch as such attempts can make him understand the extent to which his intellect has capitulated to his emotions and thereby induce him, perhaps, to take steps to restore his intellect to its rightful role. Epictetus also offers advice on grief management. He advises us, in particular, to take care not to catch the grief of others. Suppose, for example, we encounter a grief-stricken woman. We should, says Epictetus, sympathize with her, and maybe even accompany her moaning with moaning of our own. But in doing so, we should be careful not to moan inwardly. In other words, we should display signs of grief without allowing ourselves to experience grief. Some will be offended by this advice. When others are grieving, they will assert, we shouldn't just pretend as if we sympathize with them. We should actually feel their losses and actually grieve ourselves. Epictetus might respond to this criticism by pointing out that the advice that we respond to the grief of friends by grieving ourselves is as foolish as the advice that we help someone who has been poisoned by taking poison ourselves, or help someone who has the flu by intentionally catching it from him. Grief is a negative emotion, and therefore one that we should, to the extent possible, avoid experiencing. If a friend is grieving, our goal should be to help her overcome her grief. Or rather, if we properly internalize our goals, it should be to do our best to help her overcome her grief. If we can accomplish this by moaning insincerely, then let us do so. For us to catch her grief, after all, won't help her, but will hurt us. Some readers will at this point become skeptical about the wisdom and efficacy of Stoic techniques for dealing with negative emotions. We live in an age in which the consensus view, held by health professionals and laypersons alike, is that our emotional health requires us to be in touch with our emotions, to share them with others, and to vent them without reservation. The Stoics, on the other hand, advocate that we sometimes feign emotions, and that we sometimes take steps to extinguish the genuine emotions we find within us. Some might therefore conclude that it is dangerous to follow Stoic advice regarding our emotions, and, because such advice lies at the heart of Stoicism, they might go on to reject Stoicism as a philosophy of life. Rest assured that in Chapter 20 I will respond to this criticism of Stoicism. I will do so, to the amazement of some, by questioning consensus views on what we should do to maintain our emotional health. It is doubtless true that some individuals, those experiencing intense grief, for example, can benefit from psychological counseling. I also think, though, that many people can enjoy robust emotional health without resorting to such counseling. In particular, I think the practice of Stoicism can help us avoid many of the emotional crises that afflict people. I also think that if we do find ourselves in the grip of a negative emotion, following Stoic advice will, in many cases, allow us single-handedly to subdue that emotion.